Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading Devotion by Hannah Kent. But first, book news, and there's a shortlist, and this is the Rathbones Folio Prize shortlist, which is a generous prize, £30,000, and it's open to all forms of literature, so fiction, non-fiction, poetry, I believe. And the shortlist is Assembly by Natasha Brown, The Promise by Damon Galgut, Men Who Feed Pigeons by Salima Hill, Albert and the Whale by Philip Hoare, Small Things Like These by Claire Keegan, My Phantoms by Gwendolyn Riley, China Room by Sanjeev Sahota, and The Magician by Colm Tóibín.
Mm.
So Annie and I feel quite good about this because we've read some of them.
We have, almost half. Amazing.
Which is better than usual for us. So Assembly was a standout last year. That's a short but very powerful,
punchy novel.
The Promise, of course, won the Booker Prize, and that's a really perfectly realised book.
Beautiful book. The Magician.
I loved The Magician.
I haven't read China Room, but that was on the Booker Prize long list.
Yeah, I read that. Well, I didn't quite finish it actually because I wasn't quite there, but it's a slow burn. I found when I went back to it a little bit, it's quite beautiful.
Okay.
And I loved his earlier book, which was The Year of the Runaways.
Okay.
So he's definitely an author that I like. But China Room's an interesting one, set in India mainly. And the others I don't know at all. So that's keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
We'll stay in touch with that one. That's the Rathbones Folio Prize shortlist. And on to our book of the week, Devotion by Hannah Kent. And Hannah Kent doesn't need much introduction. She is an Australian author. She lives on Paramount Country, which is sort of around the Adelaide Hills, which is near where we are today. We're on Kaurna land recording this. And it's also near where part of Devotion is set, also known as Harndorf. And Hannah Kent started early in her career, founded a literary magazine called Kill Your Darlings, which is now quite a force in the literature and publishing world. They've nurtured quite a few writers coming through. Then her debut novel was Burial Rites, which won many awards. It was also shortlisted for the Women's Prize and the Stella Prize, among others, and is being adapted for film as we speak. Her second novel, and that was set in Iceland, and it was historical, and also her second novel, The Good People, was historical but set in Ireland, and that was, again, very well reviewed and was shortlisted for the Walter Scott Prize for Historical Fiction and is also being adapted for film. And she's spoken about wanting to, with her writing, she focuses often on women and filling in absences in history, so stories of women that have not been told. And she's also written a film, so Run Rabbit Run, which she did the script for, which is being directed by Dana Reed, who did The Handmaid's Tale, and that's being, again, that's being made, I think, as we speak. She said in an interview it's got the money and the green light and everything.
Wow.
So it should be coming soon to cinemas.
Amazing.
I think. On to her latest novel, Devotion. So, of course, it's been much anticipated. Devotion is a queer love story, but it also talks about exile and touches on the invasion of Australia or the colonisation of white people coming to Australia. But it starts in 1836. It's a small community of Lutherans in Prussia, and they're being persecuted and not allowed to go to church. But they believe very passionately in their God and their religion. So they're still practicing, but it has to be covert and it's not necessarily safe for them. Hannah, the main character, is 15. So we meet her and her family, and Hannah just feels like she doesn't fit in. One of the things that's different about her is she sort of listens to nature, which is she almost has a form of synesthesia where she can hear the animals and the trees and elements of nature sort of talking to, or the earth talking to her, or communicating is probably a better word. And also she's looking at her future and her mother's telling her to get ready to be married, and it just doesn't feel quite right for her, to her. Then we meet a new family moves in, and their daughter Thea is Hannah's age, and they have an immediate connection, and they just feel they become friends, but it's more than that. It's deeper than that. They feel like they really recognize each other and they understand each other. And so it's quite a joyous thing. The community decides they're going to move to Australia, and it's quite a perilous journey and a long journey on a ship, which is crowded and full of disease, and there's no sort of guarantee they'll even make it, let alone what might be waiting for them there. So it's a real trip into the unknown, but they want to be able to be free to practice their religion. So they land in South Australia on Perimank country, and they build what is now known as the town of Harndorf, which has very much been a German settlement. It's about 15 minutes from Adelaide. And so I suppose the question is, what will happen? Will they make it to this new colony? Will they survive? And will Hannah and Thea be together? And then I just realised on the blurb it says that they can't be together. So plot spoiler. they may not be, but it's really exploring how can that love exist in that time, and some of the joys, the challenges, but also the joys of their relationship. And Hannah Kent has spoken about wanting to write it became a queer love story. I think it didn't start off like that. They were just going to have this lovely friendship. But she said she didn't want it to be a queer love story that's all focused on the guilt and the shame and the sort of sometimes pain or trauma that's associated with those stories, especially historically. She wanted it to be more joyous and optimistic. She's also spoken about she has not previously set a book in Australia, and one of the issues that she has had is how to deal with, especially because she writes historical fiction, you're dealing with the invasion or the colonization and how to deal with that sensitively as a white person, and just feeling like she wasn't her place to write the Indigenous story, and yet she didn't want to just add to the white stories about that time. And it's quite a tricky line to walk, I think, and she has found a way through with this book. So that's really interesting. It's been very well reviewed and I think was Booktopia's favourite book of 2021.
Wow.
So it's among other things. I'm assuming the awards season that it would be would be coming up. So we don't know yet, but I would predict that it will be on quite a few lists. Heather Rose has described it as utterly original. Evie Wilde says so beautiful and so raw. And Evie Wilde said, I fell in love with language again reading it. Devotion is impossibly good. So that's high praise. And Sarah Winman says a mighty, impassioned cry to love and the land. So it's had some beautiful reviews. What did you think, Annie?
I very much enjoyed it. So I was in Perth visiting my sister and got to the airport at 5 a.m. for an early morning flight back home, before realizing that the flight had actually been delayed by 5 hours.
Oh,
so
no.
The flight didn't leave until 11 o'clock. And thankfully I had this book. So I just sat in the airport for 5 hours and read Hannah Kent's Devotion, and it was gorgeous and it was so transportative and, yeah, really lush. So it's a few months now since I've read it, so excuse my rustiness. But, yeah, I remember the language being so deep and visceral, and the way that she can take you to these places that don't exist anymore. You know, even if they exist in place, they do not exist in time. And she takes you to this landscape of Prussia where, you know, it's dark and pre-industrial age, and everyone is doing everything by candlelight, and the smells and the textures that she evokes are just so beautiful and rich, and you just feel like you're there and walking through the same forests that Hannah is walking through. And then again, once they reach Australia, imagining that landscape in its kind of untouched, unbesmirched state is a real feat of imagination, I think. And she evokes that so beautifully. So, yeah, I think there's a real kind of spiritual sense to that connection with landscape and connection with the land. And I think, as you say, she treads that line really sensitively between these Lutheran people for whom their homeland has been everything and they are distraught to leave, but they want to keep following their faith. And then they land in a foreign place that is so different, and they just transform it into
Prussia.
Little Prussia, and absolutely squash all of the culture that existed here before their arrival. And so I think she draws some really interesting parallels between we can't practice our religion here, so we're going to go and practice it elsewhere that's empty, in scare quotes. And I think she deals with that quite sensitively, but without trying to take on an Aboriginal person's point of view. I really enjoyed it. The love story is beautiful. It sings. The language is so lush. What did you think?
I loved it.
I'm so glad. Yes. I really pushed you to read this because it had so much hype that you were kind of like, oh, I don't know.
I don't know why I couldn't. I don't know why I was hesitating. I knew I would read it. Mm. It was just sometimes the blurb doesn't do a book justice as well. It's hard with something like this. Yes. You can't. It almost. And Hannah Kent herself says she's terrible at doing elevator pitches and, you know, it's hard. It's funny you were saying about the landscape of Australia coming to it before it was all built up. And she said she actually really, from being nervous about writing about the hills where she lives, essentially, she really started enjoying it because she just found that she's so in touch with that landscape herself, or what's left of it, of course, but she grew to love writing about it. So that was interesting. But yes, I loved it. It was, and it has a lot of things that you know, that I wouldn't necessarily normally love, including a ghost story. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't. There's a shift. The second half is definitely a different type of narrative to the first half.
And we don't want to spoil anything, but that actually was almost a physical shock for me reading it. So that it had such an impact, but that's because I was so in the story. How did you go at the airport with the emotions of the story?
Well, I mean, it was 5 a.m. and I'd had 3 coffees, so I was just weeping. And, you know, it was me and 4 other people in the lounge who had all made the same mistake. It was fine.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Reasons to cry, you know.
Because I found it a really powerfully
moving
book. And it reminded me, I don't ever like comparing books, of course, and it can be misleading, but it had a bit of the Hamnet.
I wrote that about down too, same.
And it had a bit of From the Wreck. For other reasons.
Yeah. That's that Jane Rawson story?
Yeah, the Jane Rawson book. Yeah, just some of the, shall we call it supernatural? But I don't want to put people off by using that term. But anyway, I just really loved it. And it was another reminder, not that we need one, of how good Hannah Kent is. She is such a force in writing. And I can really understand Evie Wilde's blurb saying I fell in love with language again, because it just blows you away how she wields language and in a way that's not pretentious, it's not showing off, it's not about the writing, but just to make you stop.
And, this book is so much more lyrical. So I haven't read The Good People, which is her book in between, but I read Burial Rites and thought this is a great first novel. But this is so much, you can see how much she's matured as a writer. I think the language is the thing where she has really leapt up another level. But this just is so smooth and so rich and so well crafted.
Mm.
And I think especially the way that, as you say, that character, Hannah, has this synesthesia, a real connection with the landscape. All of those sections are so poetic and, almost crushingly beautiful. And I think we've all had that feeling of kind of going into this pristine space and thinking, oh, my God, I'm such a tiny part of this huge whole that can go on without me, you know.
Yeah, and I love how she contrasted that with their religion, because Hannah's father is extremely devout and has official roles in the church, for example, and they, you know, of course they build a church the minute they arrive in Paramount country, but they, you know, Hannah doesn't feel that connection in a building, but she feels it in a forest. Mm. And so I loved that, you know, what is divine doesn't have to be a building, doesn't have to be the structure that, you know, mainstream religion creates, but it could be that you find
that. And the purity of her faith is just so overpowering, really.
Mm. I actually flagged quite a few beautiful phrases, but one of them talked about that. I wonder if I'll have to put my glasses on, Annie. Thea says to Hannah that she would miss ordinary apples. I've forgotten what the context was, but they're talking about things born of soil. And Hannah says, I thought of Papa's vision, the shining paradisical fruit. In that moment, it seemed a frigid wonder. Mm. So he's given her all these visions of heaven or what God is. And she actually,
in the afterlife,
and Hannah just connects so much more with a real walnut tree or a real apple from the soil. Mm. So, but the way she phrases that is
which
just
is, I think,
exquisite.
Such a core part of the book, that emphasis on taking pleasure when it is offered to you, rather than the Lutheran faith, or at least the way her father practices it, seems to be so much based on, oh, well, if you're good, if you're devout, if you're proper in your mortal life, then in the afterlife you will receive all these riches. Whereas she's kind of like, but why can't I do what I want now? Why can't I experience those pleasures now? And having to straitlace herself, as so many of the women and the men, you know, there's such rigid roles that they all have to fit into, and you do see how herself and other characters chafe against that kind of structure, that they want to just be real people, fully fledged, whole people.
And also the afterlife that he describes doesn't ring true to her, I think, as well, doesn't come alive in her mind. Mm. And then there's another beautiful phrase, better a chorus of birds than a choir, better an altar of leaves, baptize me in rainfall and crown me with sunrise. If I am still somehow God's child, let me find grace in the mysteries of bat shriek and honeycomb.
Isn't that
just superb?
It's electric, isn't it?
But there's not, with this exquisite writing, it's not overblown or overdone, and that's the difference.
Purple.
But it's interesting. Hannah Kent has said that she reads, when she's writing a book, she reads a lot of poetry, so she doesn't necessarily read many novels, but poetry is obviously feeding into
that comes through. Yeah.
But no, I found the story really beautiful. It's just, as you say, so accomplished and so well put together, so well thought out. But I did, like you, feel like I was there. So you got this tension running through of what will happen to Hannah. Mm. And what will happen to Hannah and Thea? Will they be together, or will at least their friendship survive? Or how will it play out? And also, will the community survive this perilous boat journey, which was tough to read about, really? Mm. It was really tough conditions. So I was so into the story and really empathising with these characters, because she makes them very real and sort of endearing in a way that... Then the second half, or the hinge, she calls it a hinge, I suppose, actually really got me. Mm, you know, I was quite physically,
I think because it is so grounded in reality that you really don't see that kind of otherworldly section coming. But it does make so much sense thinking back on it. It feels still so real and true to the first half that it's kind of, and I think the way that she, as you say, was able to then deal with the colonization of the country was so rich and nuanced, and kind of acknowledged characters' complicity in that, even though she doesn't think it's necessarily a bad decision to come. You know, there's the kind of, you can hold the two things in your hand. You
and
know.
Even, it, well, whether it's a good or bad decision, it's happened.
Yeah.
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it?
But so I think even with the best of intentions, you can still do damage. Is what
of course,
I'm trying to say.
Of course. And and speaking of that, though, I was listening to a podcast about language the other day. I think it was Pip Williams speaking about language, and she was saying, and of course, her book, The Dictionary of Lost Words, is about the loss of language in a way. And she was saying that a lot of the Indigenous languages were lost, and that's happened in other countries as well, but in Australia, partly not being allowed to speak their language, partly because it was just because the people were killed.
Scale.
But she said in South Australia there were some Lutheran missionaries who wrote down words of the Kaurna, at least the Kaurna language. I don't know if the Peramangk as well, and some of the other ones, but the Kaurna language was written down, at least parts of it. So there's, now that they're trying to revive all of these languages, he was saying there's at least something for the Kaurna language to draw on.
Yeah, it's interesting, devastating, because there's so much richness that's been lost.
There's so much has been lost,
trying to reconstruct that is really difficult, but it's a worthy project for sure.
So it gets you thinking about, I mean, Hannah Kent's book gets you thinking about all of those things. But
as we'll make a great book club book, because you will want to discuss the spoiler with people who've read it.
Yes, that's true.
Not the spoiler, the kind of the twist.
The way the story goes. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But I really loved it. Yeah. I was all in. Devotion by Hannah Kent.
Second ghost story I've made you read in a row.
Yeah. I know. Let's not start a theme with this.
Supernatural book club with Annie and Anna.
The most unlikely book club ever. So that was Devotion. You can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, or I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at Mr. _Annie.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.